Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
She's joining me now to talk about this article, Five Things You and Your Daughter Need to Know. Dr. Sorensen, thank you for joining us.
And thank you for inviting me.
Again, you really hit a nerve. You hit a nerve. I was texting and tweeting and Facebooking and sending this all to the moms I know because I'm like, guys, we got to do this. And I got back, I'm sending pepper spray. I'm sending them with this new flashlight. I'm sending, you know, like all of these devices that we can give to our girls to help protect them. But Dr. Sorensen, isn't it true that it's not always the evil boogeyman in the bushes that jumps out and attacks you? It's often people that our kids know.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's very rare that it's a stranger. And I remember, I went to college during the day of rape whistles. And now,
yes,
as you say, there's pepper spray, there's big flashlights, there are online notification systems, things you can put in your phone, all this sort of stuff. But they're not relevant, really, because it's usually a classmate. It's somebody she knows, and oftentimes somebody she's even fond of or starting to care about.
Mm-hmm. We talked about your first thing we need to know, which is this happens. This happens a lot. It happens to a quarter of girls that go to college. This does happen. The second thing you tell us to think about is COVID related? And this was interesting, and this was new to me. You said this will be different in this post-COVID world. So how so?
Well, it's different in a couple of ways. Many of us, particularly to think about all the time that we were, you know, not exactly in lockdown, but we were staying home and being asked to stay at home, and we were using the terms socially distanced, but it was actually physically distanced from one another. And so we aren't doing the same sorts of things that we did before COVID. There's far less handshaking. There's less hugging. People are just a little bit more cautious about physical contact. And so I remember the first time that I hugged a friend after getting out of the lockdown that we had here in Philadelphia. And it just felt so good. Good friend again.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And so that hunger to be touched is there for all of us, and it's heightened, I think, when you've got a lot of adolescent hormones going on, and when there's a lot of time in which you want to break loose. And many students have been at home with their parents, taking classes online for the past year. And so they're going to be looking forward to going back to college and being there and just being with their friends again. If I can make one more point, too, and that is that the highest risk time for sexual assault on campus is what's called during the red zone. And it has nothing to do with football and being and right before the goalpost. But the red zone, when we talk about campus sexual assault, is from when freshman orientation begins until about Thanksgiving. It's that those first few weeks on campus. And why it's particularly important during COVID is that many of the sophomores, the second-year students who are going to be showing up in the fall, haven't been on campus. And so it'll be like having two first-year classes. So that risk that's usually high for freshmen is going to be high for two classes this year.
Okay, so COVID has made us long for human connection, for human touch. So probably more situations where people could get themselves in trouble because they're going to be longing for human touch. And look, nobody can blame them. But again, this is another reason why you make point three, which is you have to talk about it. I love how you write this. If this conversation makes you uncomfortable, talking about the what ifs, imagine when you get that phone call, God forbid, where your daughter says, I have to tell you something. Imagine how much harder that is. So how do we bring it up?
Well, it's going to be harder for you if you don't talk about it now, and it's also going to be harder for her.
Yeah.
And so talking about it now, before you send her off, and not necessarily when you're driving her to drop her off at school, but give her a little time to process and you a little time to think about it too, and then discuss it again if you want or need. So do it sooner rather than later is what my message is. Mm-hmm. And then once you have actually spoken about the topic, it makes it easier to talk about it again. And
right.
So if she needs to call you or calls you because a friend is in trouble and a friend has been harmed, you've already crossed that initial awkwardness and that initial discomfort that most parents and children have to do when talking about anything that's related to sex. And I should say, too, that even though, and this takes us maybe a step beyond what we were talking about here, but even though sex is involved in many of these circumstances, it's not necessarily the primary thing that the girl finds so harmful. It's because she knows the guy.
What is? Okay.
It's the sense of betrayal. She knows him. She's supposed to be safe at college. She's supposed to be able to talk to her parents about things that really matter to her. She might want to think, well, I've gone off to college and I'm an adult now. I'm a big person. I can handle this by myself. But just a few weeks before, she was at home living with her folks. And you believe me, the parents are making a lot of decisions and for the student at that point in time and doing a lot of things for their daughter. So they don't necessarily see her as the grown-up that she might see herself as or want to see herself as. And so if she turns to them and they're not particularly helpful, she can feel horribly let down, horribly let down. So
I love how you write, rules don't work. Forget rules. Talk to us about that. Because, yeah, you want to keep them safe. Oh, don't be alone with a boy. Don't, you know, go into a room where your friends are. Don't ever leave your drink, unattended. There's tons of rules. But you're saying they don't really work. So talk to us about what does work.
Yeah, the rules don't work because we don't have rules for sexual assault. We don't know the nuance of these circumstances. And so if you teach rules, there might be a circumstance in which there isn't a rule for which you've created or conveyed to her. So it's much better if we can raise our girl to trust their guts, to not override their sense of danger. And also, when they do have that sense of something's not right here, to pay attention to it. And then to get her out of there. Even if it risks embarrassing herself or creating an awkward situation, that it's okay. Just sometimes, if you have to be loud and forceful, and get out of there, be safe.
I love that. They don't want to make a big fuss. They don't want to be the one who ruins the party. They don't want to hurt somebody else's feelings, even if that person is sexually assaulting them. But you're right. That gut rule is fantastic. I absolutely love that. And then you say, for parents, I mean, one of the worst phone calls that you can receive is them calling to tell you that something awful has happened. What is your advice for parents if they do get that call?
Well, that's one of the things I address in my book,
yes.
After Campus Sexual Assault, A Guide for Parents. And that first phone call is largely a mess, quite frankly, because parents want to know, they want to understand, and all of us, when we're faced with news that we don't like, we ask lots of questions, like, what happened? Where were you? You're at a party?
Mm-hmm.
you went to his room, and that questioning can feel like an interrogation to a girl who has been recently victimized, when the parents themselves might be simply trying to make sense of the news and to take it in. And so the family has to then figure out how to get beyond that, because there's a lot of dissatisfaction of the parents feeling that she's not giving the information. And like an adult, any adult, she's going to tell you what she wants to tell you. She might withhold information and not tell you everything, but that's her prerogative and her privacy to do. But what the girls most often are looking for is simply for the parents to listen and to support her and to take seriously what her experience is. Some girls who talked with me said that their parents said, oh, well, that's not that bad. So they were judging her experience. Well, and it might not seem that bad, and I'm using air quotes here, mm-hmm. to somebody who's in their, 40s or 50s, but to somebody who's 18, who has never had anything bad happen to them along these lines, it can feel horrible. And so you need to pay attention to the psychological reality of the girl.
Mm-hmm. Devastating. I'm speaking with Dr. Susan Sorensen. She is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and she is also the author of Assault on Campus, a Guide for Parents, a must-read, by the way, for parents, and also this article. I'll post it on the Paul and Jordana Facebook page, 5 Things You and Your College-Bound Daughter Need to Know About Campus Sexual Assault. Dr. Sorensen, you and I are out of time, but I do hope you'll come back on the show, because these conversations need to keep happening before the kids leave for school, and also, of course, after for the parents. So thank you so much for the time today.
You are most welcome. Again, thank you for your interest in the issue.